Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. We have to start a little bit later today, but we're here now. Today's topic, which we'll cover probably on a regular basis some kind of way, reverse engineering the impossible. Reverse engineering the impossible. Now, of course, we're talking about primarily, at least the example that we're going to give today as a case study, we're dealing with, like, if you're dealing with a financial situation, which you don't know how you're going to pay, I don't know, pick what the car note, the rent, the mortgage payment, property taxes, whatever financial, and you just don't know how. It just seems utterly impossible. So, but there's some ways to do it, particularly if you reverse engineer the problem or the situation. And reverse, matter of fact, let's get a definition of reverse engineer. Let me find one online. This should be reverse engineering. Okay. All right, reverse engineering in simple words. All right, reverse engineering, sometimes called back engineering, is a process in which software machines, aircraft, architectural structures and other products are deconstructed. All right, let me break it down simple, isn't it? Reverse engineering, as far as what we're talking about, is essentially taking a look at the problem and deconstructing the problem. Break it down into simple parts where you can clearly understand it and then solve it. Okay. And the case study we're going to use today is one that Steve Harvey, the comedian actor, experienced. So, and then you can apply it to your life. And then we're going to apply it to what we do. And all you can take part in. So, all right, let me find my studio again. So, matter of fact, while I'm trying to find my studio, all right, hold on, wait a minute. The case study we'll give today, Steve Harvey, at one time had a tax bill. He owed the IRS $22 million. Let me repeat that again. At one time, Steve Harvey owed the Internal Revenue Service $22 million. And he was facing a possible prison sentence and getting all of his assets confiscated if he didn't figure out a solution. So we're going to go, we'll go through that case in a moment. All right, now, before doing the impossible, let's start off with a fact that some of you might not know, that if you're listening to this podcast, you're a very special person, simply because you exist. So no matter what station of life that you're in, you could be a billionaire or you can be on Skid Row broke, and everything in between. For you to exist, you as a human being existing on this planet, this, as you're listening to this, there is a that by you existing is a 1 in 4 trillion chance that you're alive. 1 in 4 trillion. I didn't say 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,000,000, but and all those are great odds. But you're one, we're all 1 in 4 trillion. So that puts us in a very special winner's circle, I would say. I mean, if they talk about impossible odds, but you beat those impossible odds, that's why you're here. Of 1 in 4 trillion. So keep that in mind. That's all of us. Now, something I ran across this morning, it said you don't need to read 100 self-help books. All you need is action and self-discipline. So if you're facing an impossible situation, and of course, you know, you might read a book here or there and get some ideas, but essentially just, you know, get 1 or 2 of those ideas and take action on them, and you'll learn more about taking action. All right, and then there's some action steps when you're facing an impossible situation. It's, and here's, it's start where you are, no matter where you are. Use what you have. Do what you can with what you have. And then God or the universe or Allah, whatever you want to call it, will step in. Because for every step you take, whether it's God or Allah takes, 2 giant steps. So keep that in mind. Also, if you have a impossible looking situation, you know what? The first thing, at least what I do, and I suggest you do it too, give thanks in advance. Although you have no earthly idea of how you're going to get past this impossible situation, give thanks in advance. Give gratitude that some kind of way you'll be shown how to get through it. Just give thanks in advance before there's nothing visible to give thanks for. Give thanks in advance. Okay, so, and let me go there. Now, when it comes to a problem, an impossible-looking problem, I'm going to suggest 5 steps. Step number one, and I'm going to repeat some of this. Step number one is, whatever that particular problem is, and we're going to use Steve Harvey's case in a moment, deconstruct the task into simple steps. You might want to read the book, Your First 20 Hours. That's about acquiring skills. But anyway, so if you got an impossible situation that you're faced with, deconstruct that task into simple steps. Next, once again, I said this a few moments ago, start where you are, use what you can, do what you can, and then allow the unseen forces of God or Allah, whatever you want to call it, to do their part. All right, now, the case study that I want to bring up today before I go to the phone lines, and this is what I, I would call it reverse engineering. I tried to upload it, but, but it wouldn't upload for some reason. Anyway, Steve Harvey at one time had, He owed $22 million in back taxes to the Internal Revenue Service. And it was a possibility that he might go to prison because he hadn't paid those taxes, or his accountant. Steven paid the money, but the accountant, he wrote checks out, and an accountant embezzled the money, and they found this out after his accountant died. But the government still, the responsibility was still upon Steve to pay those taxes. So Steve was faced with the possibility of going to federal prison for income tax evasion and getting his, you know, his home and everything he owned, you know, family house and all that, cars and all that, confiscated, you know, to help the IRS, you know, recover, you know, as much as that $22 million is possible. So long story short, Steve, his lawyers were able to arrange for him to get a payment plan with the Internal Revenue Service. Now, let's take a look at this. $22 million either come up with the money, or we're going to lock you up and basically take your stuff. Family house, the whole nine. You know, you got a wife and kids. $22 million. That alone is daunting. Okay, 22. Most people don't earn $2 million in a lifetime, let alone $22 million that he owed. Okay. So what they did was they said, all right, here we go. We're going to give you a payment plan. A payment plan to pay the $22 million back. Now, at the outset, that sounds really good. All right. You pay the $22 million in a payment plan. But his payments, his monthly payments in the payment plan, was that he had to make monthly payments of $650,000 a month. $650,000 a month until the Internal Revenue Service got all their money back. Now, let's take $22 million and divide it by $650,000. Okay, that means he would have to be making payments for a little bit over 33 months, almost 3 years. If he missed a payment, he defaulted on the payment plan, goes to federal prison, the IRS steps in and confiscates the house, the houses, the cars, and wherever your wife and kids live, you know they got to get it from the roof. $650,000 a month. And he, once again, to most people, and including Steve, an impossible situation, an impossible looking situation. So now, let's take $650,000 a month, and then let's divide that by, well, let's say 30 days in a month. That means that he would have to take in an income, a daily income, of $21,666 on a regular daily basis for every 30 days in a month to pay the Internal Revenue Service. Some people don't make $21,000 a year. He had to come up with that kind of money per day, plus still keep up his living expenses for he and his family and pay his current taxes. All right. Now, how did Steve get through it? He said basically he went to work. He didn't recommend any books to read or nothing like that. He just essentially went to work. He said he stayed on the radio, and he worked every weekend that he could, which was probably most weekends, and he probably did some stuff during the week, but he worked every weekend, and he sold out due to the fact that he was on a lot of radio and television appearances and all that. He sold out a lot of venues. So that's how he was able to consistently come up with the $650,000 plus, because he still needed to pay his current taxes and living expenses. So that's how he was able to do it. He figured, I mean, because comedy is his thing, so he knew he had to do a lot of radio shows, and he has a radio company where, you know, he's on like 5 days a week. And then he got some high-paying gigs like the Family Feud, you know. And then he worked. He just really worked. He got into high-paying gig situations because basically comedians and actors are self-employed people. You know, they work from gig to gig. So that's how he was able to do it. And he sold part of his radio company, I think to iHeart, and he got a big paycheck for that, and that helped him pay it off. But that's how he was able to pay off. I mean, if that's not impossible looking, I don't know what is. So now, if you want to hear that audio, you go to video. I mean, excuse me, go to YouTube. And just type in Steve Harvey tax problem or Steve Harvey 22 million. The video will come up, and then you can hear Steve break it down in his own way. But now, let's apply that to what we have going this year. By, what, Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, I believe? At Christmas Eve of this year, we want to build 100 houses in a day. So which sounds impossible to most people. It's been done before, I mean, not by me, but it's been done by other people. So to reverse engineer it, I'll say this much. Now, number one, we can partner with 100 individual people and that's one way to that, because we're breaking it down. Partner, and of course, we got to start lining up partners now. Okay. It's May 17th, 2023. So, 100 partners, and then we had to get a house or a housing model that really won't cost a whole lot of money to put together. Because we're going to really depend on social capital to build a lot of these, all these homes. So yesterday we went on a review on updated Airbnb. So there, and tomorrow we'll break down more of this, and I don't know, tomorrow we'll do part of this tomorrow, but we're gonna bring in some social stuff tomorrow. But in any event, where we'll be able to build homes at, you know, very inexpensive prices. But then we can, you know, sell them as well. So, step one and the deconstruction of how to build 100 homes in Hurricane. We're going to need to collaborate with, you know, now, of course, if we found 10 people and each one, but right now we're looking at, let's really simplify this, if we can partner with 100 people and or small organizations or a combination of the two, and we're going to build collaboratively a tiny house with each one. And, of course, we need the financial resources for the materials. So step one of the deconstruction that makes the impossible possible of building 100 houses in a day, step one is we need to find 100 people. Now, we don't find them all. We're not trying to get them all in one fell swoop. Tomorrow we'll announce who we've got on. I'm one. Chris Collins is two. Reba Brown is three. So now we need 97 more. We need 97 more. Okay. So tomorrow I'll update you on, you know, how close we are to reaching. But we got three. And that's more than enough to start with. Okay, so three. That's making the impossible possible. And then I have something from a quote from Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. Become a possible. Libertarian. That's what I am. No matter how, and he's all about possibility thinking. So is Dr. Bob Schuler. Become a possible libertarian. No matter how dark things seem to be or actually are, raise your sights and see possibilities. Always see them, for they are always there. Norman Vincent Peale. So, I see the 100. Oh, and that, you know what, we're going to be building and selling, so we'll have a seven-figure a day. We're going to turn those 100 houses into $1 million revenue in a day. So we need 100 people, bare minimum, to do one house on December the 24th. We've got three people, so we only need, and listen to me closely, we only need 97 more. That's all we need. Okay, so I'll give you an update tomorrow on are we one person closer and, you know, and how you can get involved with this. Okay, on that note, let me find my way to the phones here. Let's see, we started an hour earlier today. We're not going to go a whole 2 hours because it's, we started an hour late because I had a conference call I had to get on, which I was handling the impossible there too. All right, anyway, let me see. Okay, 773, your mic is open.
Grand Rising.
I'm better than
I like that deconstructing. So yeah, we just do a countdown. I've worked with schools and parents, so I'm gonna start with reaching out. Maybe we can do an email, mass email text to send out. And as far as email, I said mass email. A text message to send out to those that I am in contact with, and because we'll get it faster. And of course, you're on the radio, so get that 100 people, 97 more people.
No, we only need 97 more though. That's all we need. 97.
Right, the 97. Yeah.
We got three. We got three, so yeah. We only need 97 more.
So I'd like to do a maybe a a simple interest and then commitment.
Okay.
Yeah, just a commitment letter, you know, just so that they would actually, you know, just agree that they are dedicated to the project.
Right. Now, you've got an event coming up here soon. Give us some particulars on that.
So that's June 23rd, 2023. And that is Cash Now Entertainment is presenting an investment event, a luxury event at the Grand Ballroom, Chicago. We're looking for experienced investors. It is a private event, so they would need to call 773-449-8839 or go to cashnowentertainment.com and reach out to Doc. Doc, his stage name is, he's a rapper, and he's the producer of the song called Celebrate Your Life, and I'm the featured vocalist. It's on YouTube. So WF Doc is his name. I wanted to explain that, deconstruct that. And so I call him Doc for short. So Doc is the CEO of Cash Now Entertainment, and anyone interested in attending that event, tickets are $75. It is a fundraiser to build Star City. So that would be the perfect collaboration for the tiny mobile solar cabin. And I did invite Doc on.
Well, tell us about Star City. What's Star City about?
So Star City.
About Star City?
Okay, and I sent you the flyer. I do apologize. So Star City is pretty much he wants to make the information exclusive to this event. However, it's not being built in the state, I would say that much. So he's building Star City, I guess because he's a star, I'm a star, I don't know. But he's calling it Stars City, Stars with an S City. And he's already invested. And the investment gives you at least for your investment a double return because of the dollar amount. So the dollar amount where it's being built. So what I would like to do is have him on to give some specifics and, you know, more details than I actually even know. But certainly he's going to do a presentation based on the opportunity to share and how he has began investing in this other country. And so this event is going to have dinner, the presentation, some entertainment, and of course the engagement and networking, the engagement with those who want to step up to invest in this opportunity, as well as I will say this, he is helping to rebuild parts of his country where his family is from, and this is the gentleman whose mother built a house with her own hands. She built a house for her and her children. Yeah. This is WF Doc. We shared that story before. So,
okay.
Yeah. So call 773-449-8839 to actually where vendors' tables are only, that's where the deal is for this fundraiser. We're only asking for a donation of $50. For the vendor tables, and you get two seats at your vendor table. So it's only $50. Call 773-449-8839 if you know someone. So because I know our podcast is nationwide, worldwide, I guess. But the thing is, it's going to be in Chicago at 6351 South Cottage Grove, hosted by the luxurious Grand Ballroom Chicago. Grand Ballroom, it's called the Cinderella Room. That's
what the features and the scout designs and so forth in the venue. It's it was like made in the like a replica of a large in the inside of a Cinderella carriage. So yeah, Mike Smith is the owner over there. And again, 773-449-8889 or go to castnowentertainment.com for those tickets. We have a special for the $75 entry. Two people can get their ticket for $50 each, just to break that down. So, of course, we want more people in. That's an incentive to get more people there. $75 each, two people for $100. Because I don't want to say couple, because two men might want to come and they may not be a couple. So, yeah, so.
Okay, all right. And give that number again for people that want more information or give a donation.
So, brother, like my 22-year-old just he just came. He's going to be available in about 5 minutes. I wanted you to explain to him, you know, just what we're doing, because he missed that part. He wasn't feeling well. So, matter of fact, I'm going to have him call in. In that way, he could ask questions. He asked questions before, but I just want to get my sons. I'm going to create that engagement, that commitment letter, and present it to three of my sons, because I told them that they need to help me build my first well, I've had a house before, my first tiny mobile solar home. So, yeah, we'll do that.
Okay, all right. We'll be back in 2 minutes, plus we'll be when we come back in 2 minutes, we'll take calls from 309 and 203.
Bye.
All right, area code 309, your mic is open.
Hey, good morning, L.A. Good morning, Reba. And I know I'm always looking forward to hearing, projects and what Reba's got going on. And I can't wait for her kids to build that first solar cabin for her. And, but I've got, I invited a few people this direction. I don't know if anyone else has came into the call line, but I'm pretty sure you got an area code 203 there. She's there in New York. And
203, their mic is open. 203, your mic is open.
Hey, everybody. Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Wonderful.
Glad to hear
this is Denise. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Denise.
Sure. So my name is Denise Barbudo. I reside in Yonkers, New York. And I wanted to talk today about a big concern I have. We're waiting any minute for a busload of migrants to come into a hotel that's about a half a mile from my home. We don't know how many migrants are coming because with 100 rooms that they're taking, obviously could be more than one person in a room. And they're actually kicking out the people who are already in the hotel, some construction workers, people who have their weddings already planned and have reserved rooms for their guests have now all been canceled. And, one day we could all be migrants. I realize that. We're all, God's children. But we need a solution. And, it's not just here in my backyard. This is happening everywhere. And it's not just migrants. I also work to help veterans reintegrate back into society. And I also help children that are aging out of foster care, looking for places for them to live as well. So this is a huge problem. And it takes an army, right, to solve this problem. So I just wanted to share that with you all and kind of let you know what I'm dealing with over here.
What's the game plan?
The game plan is I'm going to start getting on the phone with the mayor's office and other people today to see what we can do in terms of letting them know about, some projects that we might be able to do, with some modular steel homes and so forth that my friend Chris is involved in. And kind of get their input on that. I know that we have land available everywhere, right? It's just a matter of people being willing to partner up with us and spread the word that we're here and we're ready to help.
Okay, all right, that sounds good. It's interesting. There's a lot of immigrants coming into the country, and. Quite a few, what do you call them, sanctuary cities. And I was talking to a friend of mine. He knows people from Ukraine. And I was just throwing out the idea of, in this particular case, this Ukrainian has to move from the place where she's at. So I said, there's a whole bunch of people, up in your metro area that have the same, Ukrainians that have the same problem. They've got to move. I said, why don't you get a patch of land, get a few acres, and then start, New Kiev, whatever. But that is, Chris, what do you think? This sounds like there's opportunity there.
Oh, yeah. No, there's definitely opportunity there. Me and her was having a conversation. I was like, radio started late today. Why don't we get on here and we start to discuss this so that we can collaborate and actually come up with this synergy and see what we can do to get something implemented and started.
Now, Yonkers, right. I've been through Yonkers, that's passing through. That's all I was. I don't know much about the landscape of Yonkers. I know it's part of the New York City metro area, if I'm correct.
Yeah, you are correct. It's about no traffic. It's about 25 minutes from Manhattan.
All right, that's close, real close.
Yeah.
So now I know the cost of living is. Yeah, the cost of living isn't cheap there. So what's the land? landscape of Yonkers like? I mean, I imagine being close to that close to Manhattan, there's really, I mean, just from, like I say, I've only passed through Yonkers a couple of times. I didn't see any, it was all urbanized. So is Yonkers basically just an urbanized place?
Yeah, there's no acres of land here. Now, a little further up, you know, like, you know, 45 minutes and then on up, there are some parcels of land. But, you know, because I also work with this nonprofit, as I mentioned, and we help the veterans and stuff, we look for things all over. So, you know, for example, there's 7,000 homeless youth in Manhattan right now. And about 2 months ago, they passed this ordinance where this anybody who was helping them with cots, and they had to remove the cots. And these kids were not allowed to fall asleep. And if they did, they were using their sneakers and a T-shirt for a pillow, right? And if they fell asleep, they're supposed to poke
right.
them. I mean, you know, this is torture, right? So there's 7,000 kids there. So I've been talking to the founder of that nonprofit and talking to my founder of Beyond Living to see how we might be able to partner and help. And since a lot of these kids came from the South to come up to New York anyway, would they be willing to relocate to another state, you know, where we could give them a bed and a job? And obviously there's going to be some people that would say yes, right? Because it's better than being on the street, so they didn't have a home anyway. So it's my same thought with the migrants. Like, they're not tied to Yonkers. They just happen to land here. You know what I mean? So if we can get land in another place that's less expensive and get them there, you know, that could be a possible, you know, solution. You
now, how far away could that land be, though?
Well, it depends. I had an associate, Chris, you know, Anthony, that said, you know, all told, like right now he has access to, through various people, over 500 acres of land, but it's scattered. Like, some's in Georgia, some's in North Carolina. I'm not sure of the other places at this moment, but, you know, it's not in New York, but, you know, we could probably find something in upstate New York. But again, like I said, these people have any.
Oh, yeah. Upstate New York's got, upstate New York's got plenty of rural land, and, then if people like the urbanized setting, like Niagara, New York, Buffalo, New York, and Rochester, New York, all have, in my opinion, affordable housing.
Albany.
So there's a lot of possibilities in New York State.
Yeah, I imagine that, I don't know if it works, but maybe they have to keep them in New York because they arrived in New York, so they, for whatever reason, can't.
Right.
Other state because of, you know, whatever political reasons they can't do that. You know, I don't know how that all works, but like I said, this
right.
just happened.
Well, New York State, the state of New York has plenty of, once you get outside of New York City, particularly the metro New York City area, I mean, prices really drop in New York State. So,
that's true.
You know, yeah, there are plenty of opportunities in New York State alone. So, keep us posted on that.
I'm sorry?
I have an idea. I have an idea here. Well, what about Angela? Angela has 187 properties right now, and they can be bought for, you know, as little as $200 down. I've got a list of everything that she has, every piece of property she has. But there's also another lady that has 2,000 properties, 2,500 properties, that is still in the same situation, $100, $200 down, $500 down, you know, $50 a month payment. You know, I think this could be maybe an avenue we need to look at when we look at just the one lady that Angela knows, not counting anyone else that she might be able to bring to the table here. We're just talking about the one scenario that we've been talked to about. So
that
we know that there
perfect.
Is a lady out there.
That sounds like an amazing opportunity, to be honest. You know, I think even my Beyond Living folks would also be interested in that as well. To be able to help, you know, and not just the migrants, but the veterans and other people who need help, because it's not just the migrants. You know, that's there's a lot of people who need help. And, you know, that could be a very, very amazing opportunity. I've been looking at some land websites as well where they don't require a lot of money down, and in some cases there's owner financing as well, but a lot of that land needs work, you know, the clearing and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm doing my homework on that even before I heard about the migrants coming in.
Yeah, the thing Angela had educated us on was the online auctions. And, you know, we just had one scenario that we heard, and it were, there was 10,000 properties up for sale. There was 250 bidders. She bought 20 properties that day for less than $2,500.
Wow. I need to know about that site.
That's what I'm saying. You know, you brought this problem to me, and it was like, hang on, wait a minute, hold on. We need to go on the radio. We need to talk about what solutions we already have in place, and we need to implement an action plan. Because there are answers to these problems. We don't have to wait until by the time somebody can put the down payment on it and get brought from New York to wherever, I'll show up with the package for the little independent living situation that they're needing or whatever they're needing. I can have it on that land before they get there. And when they get there, we turn around and build it. And now they got something to live in, but they build it. You know, put pride instantly into something. And, you know, if migrants are going to be coming to the country, you know, they would want, I'm sure that they want to be a benefit to this country and not a negative. So as they come in and it being a negative, I think we need to just to actually show them what kind of benefit they can be, because all they got to do is sit in and come together, do something, break bread, and celebrate afterwards.
Yeah,
so,
and I think similar to our Beyond Living model, like when we get a resident, they're to us by various nonprofits and agencies, be it the Salvation Army, be it, you know, whatever nonprofit it is. I'm actually going to attend a meeting on the 25th at Arizona College here in New York, which is basically a community meeting of various individuals to speak about this very issue. This is before we knew about the migrants I was invited, so this happened afterwards. You know, just to let people know, you know, what's going on, to let them know that I'm here and just kind of, you know, spread the word. But with Beyond Living, I kind of digressed a minute. We vet these people, so to speak, you know, that the example for that they've been clean for at least 30 days, that they agree to work a minimum of 20 hours and then take some other classes and, you know, learn how to budget and other things, right, that they need. Because you can't just give somebody a home, you know, you got to teach them to fish, right? So that could be part of it, you know, that we literally would talk to these people like, look, we have this opportunity, you know, get to know them a little bit, are you interested, you know, et cetera. I mean, some of them may have expertise in some building stuff. You know what I mean? Maybe they were painters. Maybe they were, you know, I don't know, landscapers. Maybe, you know, I don't know what their background is, you know. Even giving people cleaning jobs, like Keith, who runs Beyond Living and also has a lot of short-term rentals, and he hires the residents to do the cleaning for his Airbnb, that kind of thing, while they're learning other skills. We also do peer-to-peer delivery he set up where people, you know, they buy a like a couch off of Facebook Marketplace and have a way to get it home. They hire our peer-to-peer people, or they buy a big TV, you know, and they can't put it on their bicycle. That's a joke, but, you know, they hire our people. And we also have some work-from-home opportunities that we teach them how to build funnels and websites and landing pages for small businesses, and businesses pay for that because a lot of people just don't know how to do that, right? And so creating jobs and speaking to various companies about, you know, do apprenticeships. We have a guy who'll do plumbing apprenticeships for, as an example. Plumbers make a lot of money. I know last plumber I hired, you know, got a nice check, I'll put it that way. But that's what we need. You know, we need – there's like three pieces. We need the residents, which we know we have, right? We need a place to put them, and we need the jobs and the education. and to help them be part of the community. And then there's a spiritual component.
You say they're from where now? They're from where now?
I'm sorry? I'm in Yonkers.
They're coming in from where? They're coming in from where?
I don't know which country they're coming in from. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I can find out.
I
don't know.
I was wondering if it's coming from, you know, could it be a language barrier or something like that?
I'm going to kind of Google it real quick while we're on the phone here. If somebody else can talk while I do that, that'd be great. That shouldn't be hard to find out. I'm thinking it's got to be south of the border.
Right.
Let's see.
Right.
Coming from to you.
There's a lot of land and building opportunities in New York State.
Right. I'm just, right now, even without scrolling too far, it says New York school gyms to house new migrants, prompting an uproar. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess school's out soon, but okay, that doesn't sound very ideal, does it? Let's see where they're coming from. Most of them Venezuelan families.
Okay, all right, so they're speaking Spanish. So now, Reba, that's your department. Reba, the teacher, La Maestra, she's bilingual. And she gives Spanish lessons.
Yeah, we definitely need them to be able to learn a language, right? That's important.
Right.
I had talked to another lady who has a nonprofit in Las Vegas a few months ago. We do a weekly call for Beyond Living where the nonprofits can come in and ask questions and answers to see if, you know, we can partner with them and how we may help and collaborate. And she takes in refugees, and her challenge is they not only do they not speak English, they don't know anything about punching a time clock and, like, being on time. Like, they don't know any of that, like how to be responsible to hold down the job. So there's a lot of teaching that is involved. And I don't know where her refugees come from. I don't recall. I talked to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well,
now
you've got, it's we're going to hear some success stories, I'm sure, people coming in. And, I mean, all kinds of success stories, from families to entrepreneurial and whatnot. You got them coming in from Venezuela. You got them coming in from Ukraine. I think Syria. Then, of course, we have south of the, across the, California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, those border states of the United States, where you have people that are going in and out 7 days a week anyway. So,
right, so I just read, this was last fall, an article. The population, this is in, you know, New York again, the population, the city's main shelter system broke a record in 2019, right, after it exceeded 62,000 people, and of that number, 12,700 were migrants. That was then. Now, going forward, Mayor Eric Adams, state of emergency, okay. As of October 26, 21,700 migrants have arrived in the city. About 7 million refugees and migrants have left Venezuela, a country of 29 million people. Okay, let's see. I am reading here, some more here.
That might be tomorrow's podcast. Immigration.
It does not have a diplomatic relationship with the Venezuelan government, which severed ties with Washington in 2019.
Okay, I'm reading here statistically. The regulars know I'm in the numbers. Approximately 268,000 non-citizens obtained lawful permanent residence, also known as LPR, status in the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2022. Nearly 136,000 non-citizens issued immigrant visas by the United States, Department of State. Let's see, a 29% increase from fiscal year 2021 in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
And they say about 1.5 million people immigrated to the United States in 2021. That's according to the United States State Department. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Over
330 people. You were saying
a lot
again?
Of us, I was going to say a lot of, I mean, to be honest, I mean, most of us that are here, somebody in our family immigrated to be here, right? Like my parents moved here from England. You know, I had a green card and I was able to get citizenship. You know what I mean?
What part of England?
St. Ives.
Have you been to Cornwall?
Actually, that's where my mom was born. We came over when I was 4 years old. And I'm much older than that.
Okay. No, that's a place I got on my list. I need to get over to Cornwall.
Yeah, I love to travel. I have several places on my bucket list, but I digress. But point being, like, you know, we are a melting pot here. You know, everybody... Like, my husband is half Irish and half Italian, right?
Okay.
So, you know, people come from everywhere to be here. This is basically a state of emergency, basically, what we're going through, right? Now, New York is under strain because they have a rule requiring them to give shelter to anyone who asks. But now the mayor is temporarily suspending some of them, just to cope with the surge of arrivals, I'm reading, right? So it's like, you know, they're not want to put them in a standalone gym in Coney Island, as I mentioned, putting them in a gym. So let's put them on Coney Island.
Okay.
Stick them in a gym. You know? I mean, I guess it's better than putting them in the street, but they have no place to put them.
Right, right.
You know,
New York City, New York City's got a standing population of over 8 million people.
Right, right. And then there's these horrible statistics, like even with the foster kids, that, you know, within 72 hours, they're selling their bodies, right, because they're trying to make money. I mean, it's the same thing I'm sure would be happening with these migrants as well. You know, they don't have any money. They don't, they're bringing their kids over. I mean, it's a terrible situation. You know, I can only imagine, you know.
Well, no, you sound like you have a pretty interesting story. So your parents brought you over here at four from England, and then, like, your mom and dad, I mean, what did they do to make ends meet as you were growing up?
Well, actually, they ended up separating not too long after we came over to the States.
Okay.
My mother, a nurse in England, but didn't have the – and actually – she was back in the day where they did drug testing on animals. So I'm a big animal rights person, believe me, but back in those days in the 60s, there was no such thing as far as I know. And so we actually, it's funny, we lived on this property where we had a windmill in the front yard, and I remember as a child. So I started school at the age of three, so I learned to read by the age of four. So I was pretty smart when I got here, right? But I remember having like a big pet Galapagos turtle, a monkey, because after they would do these studies, then my mom would bring these animals home. She was like Dr. Doolittle at my house. pretty funny, right? Those are my earliest childhood memories. And my mom always scrambled, but she also became, I would say she suffered a lot from depression.
And I ended up in the foster system as a result of that.
And well, anyway, you're in Yonkers now, and that is not an inexpensive city to live in.
No, it's not, and we're actually considering moving to Atlanta in January. We're starting to do our search to do that. So, Yonkers, sometime in the near future.
Yeah, Yonkers. Well, like I said, it's not that far from Manhattan. So.
Nope, it's not.
Yeah, once you cross that, but that metro area has got about 18 million people, I think, metro-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes all in New Jersey and other places. So, Atlanta, you'll get a lot more bang for your buck, so to speak. So,
I think we might
do a podcast bar on immigration because, I was talking to somebody yesterday. They're dealing with a Ukrainian, and so you have them. I think you have some Syrians, and you mentioned people coming up from Venezuela. So I know Washington D.C. last year, within a 6 month period of time, 9,000 immigrants. I don't know where they came from. Entered in Washington D.C. is really not that big of a city. And so they've been able to, at least a handful that I've heard about, they have places to stay, and they tap into government resources. So, all of it's legal and above board. So, and you're saying what? Anyway, so. Okay. Oh, that's somebody else. Okay. So, Chris, any other comments?
Well, I want to say thank you to Denise for coming on here and bringing this problem to our awareness. And I think we can definitely use what this whole show is about to actually implement something and do something and make a difference. But also, these people are going to need a purpose when they get here. And
absolutely.
We want them to feel welcome as well, because it takes every person on earth for us all to do something positive. To just have such a momentum that can't be stopped. And I'm ready to see that perpetual motion of just people's hearts going and
listen to this. I just want to share this. I know we need to close. So Mary Adams is also considering housing the migrants on cruise ships, okay? And they began construction on tent shelters to house about 500 on Randall Island. After the initial location for the tents at Orchard Beach parking lot in the Bronx flooded in the rain. So they've got Randall's Island, right? They're putting tents up.
Well, they do not need to put tents up. We could be an individual living situation. So we need to implement that solution to what they're talking about, because they don't have this until they're educated. So let's tell them that they have it. And if we can make 10,000 feet out of, per 8 hours out of just one of these factories. So let's kick something loose and let them know that, look, let's fix the problem. Let's don't do it with a temporary tent. Let's don't put a bunch of people in the same room. Let's give people dignity as this is all happening. And they will, for one, these people are going to be like, you have to be kidding me. This is the way life is. I will do anything for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we can get. Let's give them hope.
I totally, totally agree. So I appreciate everybody's time and actually taking time to listen. And let's move forward.
All right. Well, you know, tomorrow we're going to talk about immigrant housing. Okay. Because, like I said, I was speaking to somebody about somebody from the Ukraine yesterday. So then you come on to today with people coming from Venezuela. So tomorrow, immigrant housing opportunities, because I'm looking at it from an entrepreneurial standpoint. Because I just say, you know what, this one person, she's originally from Ukraine, came over here because of the war that's going over there right now, and she's in a situation where she has to move out. So this is up in the D.C. or DMV, as they call it, District, Maryland, Virginia. So you know, there's a bunch of people around the Beltway that are in the exact same position. I said, you know, you can start a village with these people that they have to, you know, move to, you know, a new place. So that's the way I'm looking at it from an entrepreneurial standpoint. And there's so much land or whatever available. And then immigrants, where the success stories are coming at, and you don't have to be an immigrant because, like, if you live in one town and you go to another town, typically you can see opportunities that the locals don't see. And, you know, that's the same thing with – that's how I got into solar and renewable energy. I was over in Europe and I saw stuff over there that people took for granted. That people haven't, they're just starting to catch on over here. So on that note, tomorrow we're going to talk about immigrant opportunities and housing. So on that note, thank you, everybody. Everyone have a good rest of the day.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Crush your morning goals with a steak, egg, and cheese bagel or any breakfast sandwich and snag another one for just a buck with the buy one, get one deal. Only in the McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid once per day. Must opt into rewards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.